An interview between Alyssa Nielsen, N-I-E-L-S-E-N, and Betty Ramshaw, R-A-M-S-H-A-W, on November 12th in Victoria. So Betty, we'll just start by asking a few questions about yourself. So where and when were you born?
I was born in Bethnal Green, London, England, August the 18th, 1925.
Okay. So, do you have any children?
Yes, I have three. I have a daughter and two sons.
And two sons. And when were they born?
My daughter was born in 1949, my eldest son 1952, and my youngest son 1962.
Okay. So, you were living in London, and how old were you when World War II broke out?
I was just barely 14. I was 14 on the 18th of August, and war broke out September 3rd.
Okay, so did that mean that you were old enough to contribute to the war effort?
No, I was evacuated at school, and we went to a little town called Wheelham in Norfolk. And we were just, well, you read Ben Wicks' stories, much the same. And we went to the stately White House, and there was knights in suits of armor and all that stuff there. But we only stayed a month because the woman was using me as a servant. And I wasn't getting to school. And when I came home from school, all the day's dishes were piled for me. And my little brother was taken as, I think they would have taken and adopted him. And he was being treated to wonderful things like a nursery full of stuff and a rocking horse and all that stuff. And he wouldn't play with them. He would sit on the floor. And I'd be cleaning, and Mrs. Vince said, "Why don't you play with the toys?" And he said, "If my sister can't, I won't."
Wow.
So we only stayed a month, and my mother came down.
So you were evacuated without your parents then?
Oh.
You were sent to a...
We were sent to this little village. Yeah, you just got a letter from the school to say pack your children for evacuation when told. And you had to have a little bag. My mother sewed a cloth bag for each of us. It had to hold clothes, shoes, raincoats, and your gas mask and things like that. And my mother sewed into my coat money. And all she said to me was, "Look after him. Don't use that money unless you have to." So you didn't. I didn't dare lay that coat down anywhere. And he was only 8. And when we were evacuated, it sent us to this one house. And there was it was full of lice. And I took my brother out in the middle of the night and sat on the step. And I killed fleas. They were all over his body and in his pants. And then I walked. I don't know, just I found the school, and the next morning my teacher found us, and that's when we got to this other house.
So you moved to a second house?
Yeah, the big house, that's where. I imagine it was quite reasonable. After all, you get the government would have said to your parents, "You have two extra rooms, so that means you can have four children." Well, that's nice. Suddenly got four kids from somewhere else, you don't know who they are.
Yeah.
They could be clean, they could be full of lice for all you knew. And that's how they did it. And these people came to the school when the bus came in, and they picked out, the farmers picked out strong boys, somebody else would pick out the pretty girls, and any ones got left, that's what you got.
Yeah. So I guess people were using it kind of like free labor, like the farmers.
Oh, absolutely, but could you blame them? I mean, it wasn't done maliciously. What do you do with extra kids? You've got to put them... What, they're going to tear your house apart? Or they're going to fret? Or what do you even do?
And your parents stayed in London?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long was that? You left when you were 14 years old?
Oh, I was only a month.
Okay, only a month until...
Mum came down, took a look at the scene, and left money. And my other brother, who was evacuated, he found us. He was 10 miles away. He walked. Found us, and he was 16, you see, and he bought the tickets and told me to get on the bus. And then when I got on this certain bus, he put us on the train, and we came home to London.
So you went back to London. So you lived in London during the bombing.
Yeah, we thought bombed
out. Wow. Yeah. So what was that like?
I'm writing about it. But the night I was bombed out, Mum took my youngest brother, Alan, to the country for safety. He was too young, and we only had small air raid shelter because the people who lived upstairs swore they're never going to live in air raid. They were not going in that thing. You'll bury me when I'm in a coffin, not in one of those. So finally, we got an air raid shelter for our family in Anderson. For the first air raid, they were in the shelter, and we couldn't get in. And my youngest brother was on the floor, on the earth, and the people were just putting their feet on him. And he wasn't very strong, and my mum had visions, they're going to kill him, you know. So she took him to my aunt in the country, and that night, my two brothers were in the forces, the other two. I'm alone in the house with my dad. My dad said he went to the tube shelters. Now in the tube shelter, your spot was your spot, nobody sat in it. My dad's was in the men's toilet, and he offered to share his spot with me. I'm not going in there. So I was alone in the house. And then Gran, that was the old lady upstairs, she was going to come down to get in the shelter as the bombing started. And our dog didn't like Gran because she kicked him. So he wouldn't let Gran down the stairs. Well, then Gran screaming, and her two elderly daughters came down. It was Annie and Lizzie. And Annie was blind and had to be led, but Lizzie, she came down with a pillow, which she started to beat my dog with. Well, he ripped that aside, and there was feathers for him. So I grabbed poor Annie to take her to the air raid shelter while this fight's going on. I really wasn't too worried about her. A dog could kill him for all I cared, you know me. Mm-hmm. And we were running out the back door into the garden. She got tangled in this trellis work, and all fell down on us, and we dragged this trellis work full of roses to the air raid shelter. I got her in there and covered her up. Then the neighbor next door said, come in our shelter. So I went into their shelter, and then the bomb fell the next door to theirs. And
really?
And then it didn't explode. It was a ton and a quarter time bomb, and it ticked. So it made a crater finally after 5 weeks, 30 feet deep, but at the time it just got in. So these people stepped out their shelter and fell on the bomb. The air raid warnings came, and this couple had two babies. They gave me the babies while they went in the house to get stuff out. An air raid warden takes me, thinks they're my babies. They're very sympathetic, took me to a shelter. And I was all alone in there with two babies. And then finally these families found me and got the babies, and I'm sitting there and I got thinking about the poor old dog. So I went back three times, I got the dog and the cat and our clothes, and I'm sitting waiting in the shelter for daylight. And the guns were being towed around the street by trucks. It looked like we had a lot of artillery, we really didn't, okay? And in the morning, Mum, Dad came, and Dad, he had to take the dog to get destroyed. He was crying. And my mum was a very sensible woman. She just surveyed the situation. She said, you better get to work. She said, you're going to be late. I went to work.
So you went to work?
Mm-hmm.
After all that experience?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I went to work, and all she said was, go to Liverpool Street Station, get the train to Rayleigh, and I'll meet you. That was it. So much for counsel.
Yeah, a little bit different now. So we talked a little bit earlier about you working in a factory during the war. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I worked in, first of all, you didn't get called up for a factory until you were 16. So from 14 to 16, I had an assortment of jobs in dressmaking, sort of tailoring, shirt making, all that kind of stuff. I had about 16 jobs. I used to run around and collect my pays on Friday. It was kind of okay, you know. And then when you're 16, then you get directed to work. So when we had to get out of London, they directed me to a factory called Glanson's, and there we made army uniforms. And that was the first time I saw conveyor belts. And what they did, they had a conveyor belt, and to speed up production, they put on fast music and speeded up the conveyor belts. So everybody was going like lightning, you know? And it was a horrible job. And I got fired from that because I demanded more money, and I got fired. And then I got sent to this other place, and it was called Hobbins. And I worked there till I came to Canada, and it was army uniforms, officers, jackets. I'm a tailor, really. And you make coats and all that stuff, but it's all piecework. I got 10 pence a pair to making a pair of pants with 8 pockets. 10 pence. Now 10 pence, I don't know what that would be if you Canadianized it, but it was very little. Might be a quarter.
So who would have got this money? Would you have given it to your parents? And
oh, you never opened your envelope. That you didn't do that. Nobody did. You took your money home, including my dad, and it all went into a pot. And Mum would sit down, and the rent was paid, and you had so much for light, etc. And you got, I used, when I was younger, I got 6 pence a week. And I earned, if you put it into their money, about $1.79 a week. And I got maybe 25 cents out of that. And then as I earned more, I'd give it up. And then Mum decided that I should be buying my own clothes or choosing more. And so we had coupons, you see. And you could buy with so much with coupons. Well, best way for young people is to learn to manage, right? So I earned, as I say, piecework. I made £2.10 a week. And we decided I could pay, have anything in the clothing line, but I had to pay half of it. And that's how it went. So if you bought stockings, that was 3 coupons. Well, if you had only had 20 or so, you thought, well, so your stockings were hand sewn up, mended. You mended your stockings. And you took pride in it. I had a blue satin underslip. And every time I got another hole, I made a flower petal out of it, you see.
That's so great.
Well, everybody did. Mm-hmm. And then my Uncle Bird, who lived next door, he got the idea of painting our legs, you see, to save money. So us girls used to stand on a stool, and he would paint our legs and draw the line down the back. And we'd all stand, and then we'd all go out with our legs painted, look like we had nylon.
Yeah. So, you were saying that you were working in a factory, and when you were working in the factory, is that when you met your husband?
No.
No. So when did you meet your husband?
War was over, and I met him, I think, October 1945. I know it was in the fall. I really don't have a date, like, you don't remember these things? But I went to this dance, you see, and I didn't go to many dances. We got past it, but there were still so many of these really handsome men around. You know, every man looks nice in a uniform. And your girls, and these guys, they were so, most of them, nice. They were like rather of a companion and kind of stuff. So he went to a dance, and he was there.
And you were 20 at that time?
Mm, 20.
Okay. So, and did you feel strange the fact that he was Canadian, or was that okay with
no,
you?
No, there's a little story about that. You see, that's...
Mm-hmm.
We won a chicken. We both had the lucky numbers. And the chicken was more important than worrying about whether this man gave it. All I know is I wanted that chicken. So I invited him for dinner.
Oh.
You see, to share in his share of the chicken, which sent my mother into conniptions. She hid every bit of valuable stuff in the house because you're bringing these foreigners in. So she locked everything that was any value up in the other room, just in case he stole it.
So Canadians were viewed as foreigners?
No. In my mother's eyes.
In your mother's eyes, but not in the
I don't think so. Population. Canadians were very popular. They were well liked. Now, the Americans were not. They were brash. Canadian soldiers were. They were a gentle race, more refined. I don't know really think of the right word right now, but
maybe they just more in combination.
I don't know. They were not full of their own importance. Let's put it that way. Americans right away told you how wonderful they were, and Canadians didn't. Mm-hmm. They were just friendly, kind, and you knew when you took them home that they weren't going to shame you.
So was that your first impression of your husband?
Not really. The chicken was the first impression. He was drunk as a skunk, but I wanted him for it.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, but I did want the chicken. And he saw me home, and then he got a ride home to his aunt's place. He was there on invitation leave on my boyfriend's motorcycle. So, strange thing, didn't it?
Yeah. So you had a boyfriend before?
I had a boyfriend. I've been with him for 4 years.
4 years? Yeah. Okay.
Wow. It just happened.
So, when did you guys get married?
December 22nd, 1945, St. Peter's Church, Thunderson, Essex.
So, the time that passed between you meeting and getting married was how?
About 8 weeks.
About 8 weeks, that's... Okay.
I've never really figured it out. So, about that.
What was your wedding like?
Well, that was a party that was. First of all, you had no coupons for anything, eh? So you just told everybody you were going to get married, and someone says, I've got a dress. I borrowed the dress. I borrowed the veil, which had holes in it, which we mended. I borrowed the shoes. And then at the last minute, I could see through my dress, so we tore up an old sheet, and I made an underslip. And the man next door, he had a nursery. He supplied all of our flowers for a wedding gift. And then, of course, you can't upset anybody, so Betty's getting married? Oh, well, we've been friends for years. Can my Daphne be your bridesmaid? She's got a dress, she can. And then I had 5 bridesmaids, but they all had different dresses. And it didn't seem to matter. And then when we went to go to the church, the church was built in 1192. Very ancient church, and the roof was supported with all the beams from the Spanish Armada ships when they were sunk. These were salvaged to build the church, because Henry burnt it, you see. So it was rebuilt. And Mr. Maley was the minister, and he was very careful to explain that we had to keep this moving, because he had 5 funerals, and therefore you come and you go on time. Well, the first thing my future husband does, he's out looking for the taxi, and he got lost. So I couldn't go to the church, and I'm standing in the kitchen in my wedding dress, and my mother had gone to the church, and my aunt was telling her, you know he's jilted her, don't you? And Mum said, I hope so. And I'm standing in the kitchen, and the dog was on the doorstep eating something he'd found, and my dad and I were waiting. And in came Dick, my boyfriend, and he came up, and he gave me a great big kiss, and he said, I am so sorry. And with that, he turned and walked out.
Wow.
And by the way, we continued to write for about 2 years, and then we got married. Yeah. And finally, the taxi came, and we went to the church. And Art was finally picked up, found by the taxi. He was trying to walk there, you see. And Mr. Maley, he really scolded Art. He said to him, do you realize you're taking an English rose and you're putting her into foreign soil, which means you have to take a great deal more care. And Art's nodding, and while he's nodding, he got hooked onto my veil. And it was high church, and we had to go up the altar steps on our knees. And as we're going up on our knees, I got further entangled with my veil on his warrior uniform, and he was sweating, I tell you, beads, and so was I. And we're, you know, it's like crawling up steps in a long dress, and you're all hooked up. separated. And finally, anyway, we got married, and as we were coming out, we had to stand aside to let the coffin in. So there was my funeral.
Wow, I bet that's a very different wedding than something of your mother's generation, say.
Well, no, I think in a way, it was, at that time, it wasn't uncommon. People borrowed everything, and they made the best of what they had.
Yeah, it was a real war wedding.
A war wedding. Yeah. But, and people were dying, so the ministers were busy, and there was none of this hoopy-ha. And like, what did you do for food? My friend Violet's dad was a black marketeer. He got me some Jell-O. So we had three packages of Jell-O, which we whipped up to make go further. And Dick, my old boyfriend, got me some meat. And we made do with this very light lunch. But we had a reception.
Mm-hmm. So, did you know that the Canadian soldier had to request permission from his commanding officer before he got married?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And why do you think that they had to request permission?
At the time, I never questioned it, but I would think it was to make sure he wasn't previously married.
Was that something that was common?
Yeah. Well, apparently there was a girl in Moose Jaw who turned up and he wasn't there. They never did find him. But she was supposed to have been married to him, but I guess he just took off with somebody. Maybe he was previously married. Maybe he wasn't. We don't know. But I think that's what it was for.
Did you know this woman?
No. Just heard it.
So do you remember if you had to wait the 2-month waiting period before you got married?
If I did, I didn't notice it.
Okay. Yeah, I remember reading about a waiting period. So once you got married, did you get a military's dependents allowance?
Yeah.
And how much was that? And was it a lot of money for the time?
I think it was $30 a month, and yes, it was. The pound at that time was $5 to the pound.
So did that change your life? I bet having that money?
No, I had to, I put it in the bank, and I had to buy things when I come over here with it. You know what I mean? Trunk. Don't forget, we had nothing. And it cost something just to leave. So my brothers gave me money in case when I got over here, I had to come back.
So you put it all into saving instead of
spending it? Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. So I've heard of some women who got married because of this, this allowance. Do you remember knowing any of these women?
No.
Okay. And you told me a little bit about your wedding. How did your family feel about the wedding, and how did they feel about your husband more specifically?
Well, the only ones there was Mum and Dad and my youngest brother, and of course, family. My brothers weren't home yet. And my mother, to be honest, wasn't that she didn't like art. Wasn't that. What she was more worried about was, what was he going to do to make a living?
After the war?
Yeah. And when we talked about this, well, he was going to go farming. Well, what kind of a farm? Well, what did we know? Really, he didn't know. I don't know. I'll farm. I'll do something. I'll get something. Well, I was quite safe with that. My parents, like anybody's parents, would say, yeah, but I want something I can see and touch. You know? Let's see, do you have any training for anything? I can do mechanical work. Yeah, right. In those days, mechanical work was what? Old cars and paid-to-wire fence fixings. So they went, it wasn't that they didn't like my husband. It was more of the uncertainty of what's going to happen to their daughter.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Like, so it wasn't, a matter of fact, my brothers and all of us have always been very close. But if you say what was their thought, I would have said that. Uncertainty for my future. Worry about me.
Mm-hmm.
After all, if I'd lived in England, they're there, aren't they, to help you. If you get in any trouble, they're there. But in a strange land, we didn't have a telephone for 24 years. I mean, you could lose this child.
And also, after you got married, you waited 4 weeks and then he left, is that correct?
We were married December 27th, he left the 26th, I think, January. I'm not sure, 24th, 26th, January of 46. So that was how long. And then he wasn't home for a month. The week we got married, I think he had 3 or 4 days off, then he had to go back to camp.
Yeah.
And then he'd get a 24-hour pass. And then by the time he got home to my place, it would only be maybe part of a day or part of a night and gone again. We didn't set up any home.
And was there any feeling, like, in the community or within your family about the fact that he was a foreigner and you weren't marrying a British boy?
No. Right? Mum would have rather I married a British, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The family, in our family, we didn't even consider giving an opinion on those things. Whoever the girls married or the boys married, you were welcome, you were accepted. And if they weren't what you want, it was none of your business anyway.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. So, after you got married, how did you decide to move to Canada?
I didn't.
You just went?
Canada sent me. I knew that when you married, where you go, I go too. I knew that I would go where he went. I didn't know where that went was. My brother's got a map out, and we looked at Saskatchewan, which is a lovely bright pink on a map. And they thought it was funny because they say, hey, look at that extreme climate. And I can't say it amused me. And I think if I was frightened at all or had doubts, I wouldn't have told them, because in those days you make your bed, you lie on it. You say nothing. If he had been no good, I would never have told my parents.
You wouldn't have?
No.
And what about your brothers? Would you have told them?
No.
Mm. So your feelings about coming to Canada were more...
Duty.
Duty. And was there ever a thought that maybe your husband would move to London with you?
No.
No.
There was nothing there. Just bombed up buildings and devastation. Who wants to go back to that? There's plenty of people coming back to that, nowhere to go.
So did you ever see moving to Canada as an opportunity to leave this?
No. It was just something I did because I've married a Canadian. It had no sense nor meaning, to be honest.
Okay, so when did you come to Canada?
By July 26, 1946, on the Aquitania. And it was a 5-day trip over the water, and 3 days, I think, or maybe it was 5 days in all, I can't remember really, but the train, we got on the train, it was only at Winnipeg. When it stopped at Winnipeg, it was it nice. Before that, we had meals sitting in like boxcars. There was none of this fancy stuff I've heard other people have. And when we got to Winnipeg, somehow the engine was switched, or something. I don't know what was switched, but suddenly we had a dining car and a menu. And that was beautiful.
And it wasn't till then that you got
Winnipeg.
To Winnipeg.
And then I was in Regina, so what did I have? One meal, and the rest of the stuff was, it was served up just like you were on a troop train. There were no nurses on there, there was no doctors on there, there was nothing.
And what about the passage from London? You said you landed at Pier 21, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what about that passage? There was 5 days, right?
I think it was 5 days. You know, it's awful. Your memory's a funny thing. It may have been 5 days. I don't know. I think it was. And I really don't have many. I can see the ship. I could walk through the deck. I could do that. I could crawl in that bunk. But I have no memories of any communication with anybody or any feelings about it, except just being dead.
Wow.
I think I was dead inside.
So who was on the ship? Besides, was it all war brides?
All war brides.
And their children?
Yeah.
Okay. So were there a lot of children?
I really don't remember. I don't think there was that many that I remember. I know there were kids. I remember people carrying kids. But I wasn't a part of it. I remember just grief, I guess. I really don't know. I think I died. I died for a time.
And it was a grief of leaving your home.
I didn't want to think. So I don't think I did think.
So how much time did you get to prepare for this trip?
When were you notified? It wasn't long. I knew I had to go to London to get a trunk. My mum bought me a coat, a warm winter coat. And not much was discussed. We didn't have much. You took the clothes you had. And I always sewed my own clothes. It wasn't discussed. I don't remember even kissing my dad goodbye. I remember standing in the hall. And my mother had left her at the house because I didn't want her to come to the station. And this brother here, and the one who's still in England, they took me, they had come home. And one from India and one from Africa. And they took me to the station, and that's when we cried.
And that was Frank that brought you?
Frank took me to the station. Then he came with me to London, and we never spoke a word. Yeah. Never said a word. He just put me on the thing. I don't remember looking at him. So I think you're in a living death thing. Everything has to shut down. Otherwise, I don't think you can do it.